This is Jason Nemro. You are listening to Cohen Meander. And it's been quite some time since I've made one of these recordings. Not long ago, on my far more worked, I'm much more a writer than a talker, to be honest. I don't think I speak very well. I hang up on words. I struggle a lot with being extemporaneous. I need the time and rumination and basically deciding that a place where I'm going isn't a very good way to go, which you can't do when you're just talking somewhat off the cuff. I don't even want to talk about time. I don't have the interest really in doing both. Under some circumstances I do. When I speak publicly live, I tend to predominantly read what I've written. But here, you know, I'm on my way to work. I'm not that great of a driver anyway, so I need not to have something in front of me that needs to be read in this setting. Anyway, so it's been interesting. I've been reading slowly. Dennis Prager's commentary on the Torah. And, of course, the Torah itself has a few times where the Ten Commandments are given to the people. Right now I'm in Deuteronomy, where the Ten Commandments has just been gone over yet again to remind the people of what God told them to do. I think Christianity, and to a lesser degree Judaism, has kind of infantilized the Ten Commandments. These are things that we teach our children, and we dumb them down for, I don't know, simplicity reasons, not to make anything controversial. That's very sad. I have interesting takes on the third commandment. Thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. And then it says, God will not hold him guiltless if he takes the Lord's name in vain, which is usually dropped. People don't usually bring that part of it up, which I think puts an interesting twist on how one should perceive what God meant by taking his name in vain. Many people decide to take up, clerginess. There are certain aspects to it. Some of it has been very appealing to me personally in my youth. So I tried to figure out how one could become something of a chosen clergyman within my religious tradition, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And you can't. They just don't have that mechanism. Although I think I have run into some people who work very hard to become this thing. Closest thing probably they have is in the Brigham Young University religion department. That you can specifically put yourself on a religious scholar course and become quite noted. Of course, you're getting paid because, you know, you're a university professor. But by and large, you can't be. Taking the Lord's name in vain, and I think it can be looked at several different ways. I'm not saying vacation Bible school way of looking at it, you know, children church for a lot of Protestants is wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong. What I'm saying is it lacks, I think, necessary depth. And they keep it kind of dumbed down and kind of in children's church because this commandment can easily be turned on your professional preacher. I'm not here to say the rightness or wrongness of things, particularly on this subject. A person who you employ to help you have a deeper spiritual life, a better spiritual journey, it's a dangerous thing to have, to take this up as some sort of a profession. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, this is something reserved for what we call general authorities. There's only about 85, 90 men who get to do strictly spiritually religious work and not have to worry about money, because money is provided for them for living. Call it a stipend. You can call it a salary. It doesn't bother me either way. Always, though, with the whole idea of you must not take the Lord's name in vain. You must not use your professional or titular association with God to aggrandize yourself, to offer some alternate gospel, to rule on what is acceptable to God and what is not. These are difficult things, especially because in most, especially Christian denominations, probably so in many Jewish synagogues of different philosophies, people pay you and look to you exactly to do probably the things that you should refrain from doing because you are associated with God. I've got the interesting circumstance of being an ordained elder in one tradition and being a hereditary priest in another tradition. And of course, you know, when I call this thing Cohen Meander, that speaks to my hereditary hereditary role before God. Anyway, so one has to be a little bit careful and make sure that one is speaking the right thing. And if you're not sure, say you're not sure. Far too many people with some kind of standing, an official title, reverend, pastor, preacher, evangelist, whatever, missionary, say pretty derogatory things about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, especially about the Book of Mormon, especially about Joseph Smith. And I always caution them to be very, very careful because the second part of that third commandment that nobody says. You will not be held guiltless for taking the Lord's name in vain. Of saying that the Lord did not do something that he in fact did. Now you can say, I don't believe it, and that's fine. I think one covers themselves when they say, I don't believe that. Our tradition does not accept that. And you go, that's fine. When you say somebody will go to hell because of things that they believe that you just don't happen to believe, not because you know for certain, but because this is just what you've been taught for all these years in church, or in a theological seminary, or in any of these different places, that you feel, that one feels, sorry, I don't know if it's you, gives justification for saying, that's not right. If you do that, you will burn in hell. You know, God will cast you aside. You go, you are certainly taking upon yourself the mantle of God, being God's representative, and speaking of things that you are not certain of. I would not do that. Or I would try not to do that. If I caught myself doing it, I'd back away from that and say, you know what, I don't know. I haven't studied the Book of Mormon. I have not tested it. I have not done the things that God wants us to do. The whole point of the Bible is it must be somewhat tested. I think very few people actually test it. They simply take it on faith and in interpretations they have been taught or pulled from the text, they take that as the mind and the will of God. It says that one has to proceed carefully with that, I think. You should apply the same strict criteria to things you hear in the Bible as you do from any other text. Test it. See that it is true or not. It's inherent in the Book of Mormon. In the actual text, it tells you to do this at the end. After you've read it, test it. Pray over it. Is this what it purports to be? The writings of prophets of God. Predominantly on the American continent. Not take the name of the Lord in vain. Do not presume to speak for the Lord, especially if you are not directly authorized to do so. This is a very interesting way to approach it. Your Bible seminary does not intrinsically have the authority to say, and now you represent God. I don't think any of them really say that. If they do, then they are taking the Lord's name in vain, and that punishment may very well come to them. If you go before people saying that you are a representative of Jesus Christ, of God the Father, you better know that God takes that. If God didn't give you that authority, you don't have it, and you're using the Lord's name in vain. And that is so serious that he said there is no forgiveness for it. And I guess you can try to weasel your way out of that somehow. I haven't found a way. I find being in these circumstances to be a huge responsibility. And, obligation. That you really don't want to take these kinds of things upon yourself, like you're wearing some kind of a shiny badge. You should come at it, you know, and says, I wouldn't seek it. If it comes to you, it behooves you to try to do as well as you can to represent God accurately. Even if what you learned in seminaries or universities is in conflict with that. It's gotta be a hard thing for somebody who spent a good majority of their life as a profession, supporting one, ideology, one denomination. And then saying, you know, in good faith, I can't do that anymore. You know, you go, I guess I'm supposed to give all that money back that I was paid. Very strong way to keep somebody preaching the way you want them to. Is that you can't really give back the money usually. You spend it on the things that keep you alive. Stuff like that. You don't see it very often. Occasionally you do. That people will change from one practical religion to another and take whatever heat that generates. It's hard. So anyway, a big one for the third commandment. Don't drop off that last part that talks about how you will never be forgiven. Or not be forgiven. I can't say never. And it doesn't say never. It says not. You won't be forgiven for taking the Lord's name in vain. Using the Lord's name for your own practical purposes, which usually involves twisting those things up. Difficult difficulties. Don't be that person. I've just recently started talking about the fifth commandment. This is another one. Honor thy father and thy mother. And there's another one that kind of drops there, but it goes on. And it says, you know, that thy days may be long upon the land that thy father shall give thee. It's hard to say exactly what that second statement means. That's why it's often dropped and people just don't bring it up. I don't know if that means you'll die young. I have no idea. Although I can see in some circumstances especially in our present day, as we refuse to honor our parents by becoming parents ourselves, by marrying productively and bearing children, bearing and raising children, that this is a dishonoring of those before us that put forth those sacrifices. Having marriage and family are hard. And a lot of people have come up with much sophistry. That's a funny word, but look it up if you don't know what it is. So have put together much sophistry to convince people of the virtues of not marrying in a productive way. I mean, a man marries a woman and they have the possibility of having children and the great time that comes when they do. The wonderful blessing it is. For some people, it's very hard and very expensive to have these things. I think a lot of the expense of childbirth has been primarily introduced to dissuade young people from doing it. I just don't have the money to have a baby. The prevalence of abortions. You know, I made a mistake, or I was having sex with someone and I don't want to have a child by them. Or however it's actually done. I say personally that if one refuses to marry and refuses to have children, that one is not perpetuating our world, our life, humanity. And in doing that, you are bringing about that thing. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land that God shall give thee. Says it ends with you. It doesn't matter what magnificent things you do, what amazing feats of science you produce, whatever. It doesn't matter. It all ends with you. You will die, and you will have not given the world progeny. You will have not made sure that at least you bring another person into the world to continue the human race. You don't do that. Listen, people don't look out on those terms. They think it's all about, oh, I get choices and I have this and that. And aren't I so evolved and all that? It's like, you know what, how on earth can it be an evolution if you're not propagating? That's not evolution. That's just death. And nothing. We wouldn't have gotten as far along as a race, as humanity, unless we continue to produce progeny, children. Come on. Can I be honest? A long time ago, I came up with a retranslation of the fifth commandment. And I put a new word in. I said, bring honor to your father and your mother. I came from, on my mother's side, we had several religions represented. My grandmother belonged to the Church of Christ. One of my great aunts belonged to a Baptist church, and another one of my great aunts, they were all sisters, was a Catholic. Most of them following the religious traditions of the husbands that they married. So you can only imagine that at family gatherings, it could be quite fractious just because everybody had different attitudes about that. Of course, my mother, before I was born, had joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in doing that, of course, all three of those denominations don't think anything of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Very, very much a bad thing. I remember visiting one of my great aunts, and her, I don't even know if it was zeal, but she said, you're going to burn in hell. And, I just didn't have a response for that. I was a very young man. She was otherwise a very nice person. And, you know, she had a truck that I borrowed occasionally. She had a piece of land that we liked to recreate on. So I had relations with her, and I didn't want to mess up those relations. However, you know, she had this attitude about me that was born of her commitment to her denominational beliefs. Because I was going to burn in hell. And it's like, wow, okay. So I had to sit there, and it was going to be hard. If I was supposed to honor my father and my mother, my ancestry, I was in bad shape from a lot of people's way of looking at it. I wasn't being terribly obedient, certainly not to my own grandmother, whose religion was zealously adamant against mine. And the only thing that would have pleased her would have been to stop being a Latter-day Saint and, you know, conform to the United Brethren version of the Church of Christ. So that's where came the whole thing of bring honor to your father and your mother. Because you're not always going to agree as to what you should be doing. The other side of my family was always quite upset because I wasn't sticking with a job more than a couple of years at a time. Rarely did that. I was a good person. You know, it wasn't like I was out there shooting people, killing people, robbing, stealing, lying. The other commandments of the ten. You could question whether I was very loyal to God, at least in the perception of God that family had. But, you know, as for the last five commandments, murder, lie, steal, covet, adultery, things like that. I was doing a fine job of trying to avoid those kinds of things and trying to improve myself that way. But to a certain extent, it didn't really matter. You know, I was going to burn in hell for not following the religious traditions of my ancestors. Anyway, so that's where it comes. Bring honor, and you go, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, my own parents might be very unhappy with decisions that I make and might say, you're not honoring me. Some people translate that into obeying. which is not the word that was used. The closer rendering was honoring. And to be honest, who decides what's honorable? You go, well, the person that gave the commandments in the first place, God himself. I find myself more tied to getting honor of the Lord that reflects well on my parents than trying to make my parents and my progenitors particularly happy. Although usually it's not a problem. It doesn't create an issue. Anyway, so I've added that to the fifth commandment to help with my situation. I think it helps a lot of people. I remember sitting in a Sunday school setting, and somebody was really saying horrible things about their parents and that they didn't like them. And you go, it's okay. You don't have to sit there and love them and things like that. Their parents were bad people, and they were the first ones to kind of throw that away. And I did the whole thing of bring honor to your parents. This is, Your parents are not authorized to say what's right and wrong. God's already done that, and they don't get to supersede that, as far as I'm aware of. It's very much more about how you present yourself to God. To my way of thinking. And he will praise you. You know, the biggest thing we want to have is God to say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And having that said about you will reflect well on your parents. It will bring them honor. The honor of God. You raised a pretty good kid. You may very well have raised a pretty good kid that takes a good look at what he sees in front of him and makes decisions based on that. Religious decisions. And that means that they might not necessarily jibe with yours. And that can be a tricky thing in family relations. They didn't do what I wanted them to do. And if your parents get hung up on that, they can very much say to themselves, you know, it's a bad kid, bad seed, don't like it. They didn't follow my advice. They didn't do what I told them to do. I go, honestly, I don't think that's what we were totally here to do. To accomplish. Hopefully our parents give us good advice. And as they give us good advice, we follow it. That we don't just say terrible things about our parents. Because if nothing else, they gave us life. If nothing else, they put up with us through childhood. It may not have been the most wonderful circumstance. You know, they may come back and go, my parents were mean to me and abused me and stuff like that. And you go, but that's a whole nother thing of which the Ten Commandments does not even really get into. If you bring honor to your father and your mother, through the ways that you behave, through the ways that you act, through the life that you have led, I think that means a whole lot more than, well, I did what they told me to do. You know, they raised me as a Methodist, and I was a, oh wait, no, let me give you something that's much more poignant. I was raised a Catholic. I'm going to be a Catholic until the day I die. And you go, is that thoughtful? Have you really looked at Catholicism and on your own decide that it bears great virtue? I'm not going to say anything for or against it. Says that's a, you know, that's kind of the whole thing of, it was just, this is just the tradition that we had. And you go, there's a lot of bad traditions. I'm not saying being a Catholic is a bad tradition. But if it's stopping you from doing something that's better or more studied or higher, then I don't think much of that, you know. It's anyway, I don't have anything else on the other commandments, but these were two of the commandments that have really kind of, in the past and presently, I've given much thought to and come to interesting other interpretations of what might have been meant or how you can look at it. Not saying the easy kitty Christ way of discussing the Ten Commandments doesn't also have its uses. But there's more to it. It's richer than that. And that as we look at it, we can see some amazing things. I have. And I share them here with you. Let me leave you with the blessing of my fathers. Back to biblical Aaron. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance toward you and give you peace.